welcome to The Creative Technologist, a Jay Bauman podcast. Here's your host, Jeremiah Bauman.
Hey everybody, and welcome to another great episode of The Creative Technologist. I'm your host, Jeremiah Bauman, and today is episode 11. We're talking about home automation on this Monday, June 19th, 2017. I had hinted about this last episode that I wanted to get in and talk about home automation, and honestly, I've stayed away from home automation for quite some time because there just wasn't anything out there that I wanted to work with. A lot of that fell on Apple. One of the downsides a lot of people have acknowledged with Apple was that HomeKit was too secure. And what I mean by too secure, I don't mean security-wise, you know, safety-wise, but the fact is you had to apply your programming, you had to apply for a license. It was just a very complicated process, and so a lot of developers just stayed away from it. That gave a lot of other opportunities to pop up and kind of take that market over. And having a completely Apple household, I was just going to sit back and wait. And I tried to wait as long as I could, and then tried to buy certain products that I had a need for and make it work as best I can. And honestly, none of them are really HomeKit compatible. So today we're going to just kind of break down home automation, what it is, why I think it's important, why a lot of people are scared about it. And then I'm going to talk you through some of the big announcements and what my personal setup is and what I'm waiting for. So we're just going to jump right in and get started. So as I was saying, home automation, it scares a lot of people. You know, you hear Internet of Things and immediately you get a lot of people nervous. You get a lot of people about security and, you know, people being able to hack into your household and control your things, listen to you, data mining, you know, all that kind of stuff. And honestly, it's something that's never bugged me. I have a very secure system, in my opinion. I also live in the middle of nowhere and nobody's really interested in what I have. I mean, I've got pictures, running a photography business, and you know, some web coding. But obviously, you know, me being in the middle of nowhere, I'm not a prime target, and I don't want to be. Obviously, but I think there's a lot of paranoia with that, especially the things going on in the government. You know, you hear about a lot of things, and ultimately, as long as you have things locked down somewhat, you're going to keep out most of the riffraff. If you have people coming after you that are really trying hard on you specifically, you're going to have problems no matter what. It's just one of those things, you know. So I kind of look the other way. I just accept it and try and keep myself as secure as possible, you know, changing passwords and updating, making sure I have good passwords in place and, you know, those general good practice for online security. So in my opinion, if you take those steps and you do that, you shouldn't be afraid of home automation and you should be able to enjoy it and have a good time like everybody else. So that's all I'm going to say about that. But moving into home automation, I really enjoy it. I like being able to control things from my phone. More importantly, I like being able to control things while I'm away. I've got animals here that are living here while I'm gone, and being able to check in on them and to check on what my house is doing is really important to me. You know, being up here in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, most of us don't have air conditioning units because it doesn't get that hot very often. You know, we joke about our 9 months of winter, and you know, this summer's proven to be the case. It's been really, really cold where my heat still kicks on, and the next day it'll jump to 90 degrees. So being able to do things like check on my thermostat and see what my house temperature is and maybe flip fans on and off or things like that from my phone while I'm away to take care of my animals is really important to me. And that's just one of the, you know, minor things you can do with home automation. So as I mentioned, Apple was kind of dropping the ball on home automation. You know, I have a fully Apple ecosystem in my house. And so I have the Apple TV, which works as the hub for HomeKit. And so I have all the things in place that I'm really looking to be able to use. And some of the problems, you know, that I run into is most of the devices I'm interested in weren't HomeKit compatible. And that was really crushing for me. And I had to make some decisions and go routes that didn't involve the Apple ecosystem. Now, it's not necessarily a bad thing, but one of the big things we saw at WWDC in the announcement was that, Apple is going to open up development for HomeKit. And obviously, you knew it's time. Specifically, you knew it was time because, hey, they had to with the release of the HomePod. Having a home automation system in place was going to be a very important thing that they needed to cover. So by opening it up, the developers, getting them involved, they can develop prototypes on like Raspberry Pi and Arduinos and really, you know, go through different things to make HomeKit work. And I'm hoping that because HomeKit now will be available for everybody to really develop in and be able to use, that hopefully this means we can expect to see HomeKit products and products that are even out there start to take on HomeKit compatibility. You know, the big thing with HomeKit is how strongly it was encrypted. And that was one thing that I did like. Apple is really being careful and cautious with user data and how HomeKit works and how information's traveled between devices to servers and things like that. And so I think it's time that Apple wants to catch up, and Apple is going to make a move to catch up. The HomePod, you know, the HomePod is obviously a direct challenger to get in against Google Home, to get in against Alexa, you know, the Amazon component. And Apple's been kind of sitting back quiet, and there's been a lot of people arguing about it and kind of upset with Apple, saying that they weren't trying, they weren't, you know, innovating. And I think Apple finally got sick of hearing about it, because with this WWDC and some of the hardware announcements we can expect to hear August, September-wise, I think they're going to come out full force, and they're really going to be impressing everybody. So for the most part, I have some of the basic features of my home automation set up, but I'm not going to fully invest yet. I'm waiting to see what's going to come out of that and then make some decisions, because I do want to continue my Apple ecosystem at home. I do think that's important, and I think that I want to, you know, have that ecosystem and utilize it as best as I possibly can. So, you know, one of those things is being patient, which if any of you know me personally, I'm not patient. I am always want to be on the newest technology as soon as it comes out, before it comes out, even if that's possible. I am somebody in the past that has paid the developer account on Apple just to be able to download the iOS early and play with it and get used to it. So, yep, I am one of those people. So sitting back in home automation has been difficult for me, but I found some workarounds that have done the job, and I'm really impressed with. Okay, so now why I'm waiting specifically for the Apple ecosystem. I just want to talk a little bit about, you know, the main competitors, and really, you know, everybody knows what they are. Amazon Echo and Alexa's system has been absolutely amazing. They've been cranking out, you know, obviously super affordable homes automation speakers, and then Google, you know, brought on Google Home and all the connections and all the options for developers and products out there are it's huge. There's so many options, and that's, you know, the route a lot of people went because Apple wasn't there. Apple just basically wasn't at the table. They weren't even on their way to the party when those came out. So, you know, I've got, my parents have an Echo with Alexa at their house. I have a couple friends that have Echoes. I have a few friends that have the Google Home. I mean, you know, really depends on if you're an Android user. Most people then go the Google Home route because of the benefits of that ecosystem. But Alexa kind of stays universal with Amazon. And so a lot of people go that route. Again, the price point is extremely cheap, and it works really, really well. So the big thing with home automation, being able to connect things within your house, and, you know, playing music is a huge part of it. Amazon Prime obviously has Echo, you know, being able to stream that music, Spotify, Pandora, iHeartRadio, you know, all these different options, Google Cast, you know, for Google Home. And it's a cool tool to be able to do a lot of things in your household, you know, for a reasonably cheap option to start the process and to start kind of, you know, building what you want the Internet of Things and what you want your house to be able to do. Another app that kind of rolls into how people utilize these things is using If This Then That, or IFTTT. You can set up basically and cross-promote different applications based on a user experience. So something happens, you know, part A, which then the app will then force part B. And being able to customize that, you know, it continues to grow and you can do some amazing things. Some of the things that I've actually liked and have wanted to go the route of is if your favorite NHL team scores a goal, that software can then make your Philips Hue or whatever custom, you know, Internet of Things lighting setup you have flash a color. You know, so I could basically have a goal lamp flash in my living room every time a goal is scored from one of my favorite teams or, you know, and that obviously it sounds really cheesy to a lot of people unless you're a diehard hockey fan like I am. That's the most amazing thing in the world. You know, not being able to watch every single game, but still knowing in my house when somebody scores, you know, there's just a kind of a fun a component to that that makes me feel like a little kid. You know, you feel like you're at the rink, you know, getting that experience. And so just simple things like that really excite me about where things are going with this home automation. You know, the other thing is the price. Obviously, you know, pricing. Google Home is, I think, like $130. The Big Echo, which is Amazon's full speaker system, I think is $180. And then Apple's HomePod comes in at $350. Now, I was hoping for something more reasonably priced. I should have known better. However, looking at the hardware, Apple really did make one of the most unbelievable speakers I've ever seen. And so I think obviously that's the priority. And I think that came about because Siri's not really ready to go. If you've used Siri before or at all, it's kind of clunky. It's one of the things that I'll admit Apple just doesn't have figured out yet. You know, you guys know I'm an Apple fan and I try and be objective to a point, but you guys all know it. You know, I'm Apple through and through. They don't have Siri where it needs to be. And so I think they were really pushing with this HomePod, a true speaker innovative system. And then, oh yeah, by the way, it'll run Siri. And the reason for that is I think they're going to be putting a lot of time and energy into developing Siri before that HomePod launch in December. So I think we're going to see Siri get a major overhaul, especially with iOS 11. I think they're going to keep pushing how she operates and how it'll actually help you as an assistant the way it's meant to be. And that's going to help drive, obviously, more HomePod sales for those people looking for that high quality audio. You know, $350 is not cheap. That's, you know, you're looking at the same price as an Apple Watch. You're looking at, you know, some large, you know, I guess you can even get a 50-inch television for that amount. So you're looking to do a pretty serious investment. So unless Apple can really nail Siri and make Siri work the way you expect it to and work well, it's going to be hard to push people to a $350 speaker sell. But I think it's going to get there. I think it has a good chance. And you know, I'm putting money aside from each paycheck already because I know for sure I gotta have one, right? You know, it's gonna be driving that ecosystem one more step. And being a musician, audio is important to me. So if I can get high quality audio out of that thing, I'm super excited for that. Okay, well, moving into what I actually have for my setup, and like I said, I've been waiting and really hesitant. I wanted to jump in and really I would automate everything I possibly could if I could afford to, just because of the convenience factor. And obviously I'm a tech guy and I like to play around with that stuff. But really, you know, I tried to hit the major thing. So I wanted, you know, not only for it to function and to function well, I wanted to be able to can basically solve some problems that I was having and also be able to kind of benefit from it. So what I mean by that is starting off with the first thing. So I wanted to get a thermostat, all the smart thermostats out there. There's lots of different ones that you know, pop up. And the trick for me was I didn't want to spend the full amount that you're seeing a lot of those out there for, you know, in the $200 and $300 range, because up here again, it's we've got our heater, our furnace, and that's it. We don't have air conditioning up here. I have a portable unit that I use when it gets really hot, but I don't have central air. So having a really sophisticated thermostat that, you know, studies how I like the temperature and heat and cools and does all these fancy things has real no purpose, because I heat it when it's cold in the winter and then it's just off in the spring and summer. So I wanted to to figure out what thermostat would work best for that situation, so I'm not overpaying for features that I can't even use. But then more importantly, I started getting real nervous about the concept of letting, you know, this technology completely control my furnace. The reason why was with the Nest thermostats, the I think second generation or first generation, you heard about a lot of problems having, or people were having with the servers. So the server would go down and then they couldn't control their furnace at all. And for most people, it's not a big deal. For living in a place where there's 9 months of winter, if your furnace stops kicking on, your pipes freeze and explode. And that causes all sorts of other fun problems. And since we, you know, can range in the 200 inches of snow per year, digging out the main control, you know, the main connection to the water in front of my house would be a very serious project. So I need something that was reliable, that if the Wi-Fi or if the internet connection or servers failed, that I'd still have a thermostat that works normally. So I wanted to make sure I had a manual override in place, and that really the Wi-Fi or the internet connection of it was more of just an extra bonus. So after doing a lot of research, there wasn't anything that really fit in the Apple HomeKit, you know, big shocker there. I went with the Sensei Wi-Fi thermostat. And the reason why is it looks like an ordinary thermostat. You have buttons you can push and manually go through. If the Wi-Fi or your internet fails, it operates as a normal thermostat, a normal programmable thermostat. So like I said, the Wi-Fi is kind of a secondary approach. Now, they just announced, I think in the past couple weeks here, that of course the new Sensei Wi-Fi thermostat is HomeKit compatible now. So of course the one that I got is old news, and now I could upgrade to one that is HomeKit compatible. However, what I do suggest everybody look at is where I benefited was my Sensei was only about $100. I think it was like $108 on Amazon at the time. And the cool thing was that our gas company had one of those federal rebate programs that if you installed a Wi-Fi or smart thermostat, you would get a $100 rebate. So I took full advantage of that program, got the $100 rebate, which means my Wi-Fi thermostat cost me a total of $8. you can't beat that at all unless they handed it to me for completely free. So check into some of those rebate programs, those energy saver programs. A lot of them now are suggesting you get Wi-Fi thermostats because it does manage the heat a little better, which obviously then reduces your use and, you know, becomes more efficient for them. So, you know, I have a gas program. Obviously, I have a natural gas furnace. So check into that. It might be something that can get you one of these thermostats for practically free, or at least, you know, even if you do decide to go with a $200, $300 model, $100 off is, you know, that's definitely a way to go. So the thermostat was the first thing I got. You know, I thought that was the most important for dealing with temperature. Again, for monitoring temperature, my furnace was throwing out some problems with my old thermostat, which I wasn't sure if it was the thermostat or the furnace. So I could monitor from my phone, get alerts if the temperature dropped too low, meaning the furnace stopped working, and really gave me a peace of mind of knowing my pipes are not going to freeze because I'm going to know about any sort of heating problems the minute they start to occur. So big fan of that. I probably at some point might look at upgrading if I have the money available. But for now, I just use the Sensei app that comes with it. You know, you download it from the app store and it works beautifully. It does exactly what I need to do. Again, it's not something that I actively am in, you know, the app messing around all the time. It's more of a set it and forget it and having that safety of getting alerts if something goes wrong. Moving into my next purchase, the Chamberlain Garage System, so the MyQ system. If you've seen anything about this, basically what it does is if you have a Chamberlain garage door system, a lot of them, you know, the new ones come with this built in, you can connect it to your Wi-Fi and then monitor your garage door on your phone. So you can open it from anywhere in the world. You know, you can connect, you can open your door, close your door, see if your door's open, see how long ago it was open. Pretty good system. And the reason why I wanted this is my garage is actually disconnected from my house. So I've got two garage doors and, you know, each stall. And what I was running into problems is in the winter, it would attempt to close. And if a piece of ice or snow got in there, it would actually pop the door back open, which I wouldn't recognize until I was already back in the house. So I can't see my garage from inside my house. I don't have a downstairs window facing that side. So there's a good chance that I would leave my garage door open overnight. It would snow, the snow would blow in, I'd deal with a big drift in the morning, and ultimately, you know, just a major pain in the butt. So I looked into the Chamberlain system, and they actually have a compatible system with any garage door opener. So you install this little unit inside your garage, and then it mimics whatever signal you send to your garage door. So you play with that, you know, like you would a garage door opener, and eventually it connects, and you're good to go. So as long as you have Wi-Fi in your garage, I actually had to use a Airport Express to extend my network out into the garage, but it works phenomenally. It's amazing. If I need people to let people into my house, you know, people want to come play with my dogs when I'm at work, or, you know, want to check on them when I'm away, instead of leaving a key or leaving a passcode, I can just open it remotely from my phone, guaranteeing that it's only open when they're there. And then I can actually check and see to make sure, you know, who's there. And that's kind of what the next product I'm going to talk about. So great system, works, you know, I have a newer garage door opener and an older actual system, and it works with both. So I have it for each side. It's unbelievable. The app is simplistic, easy to use, really, really great, and love that for everything that it does. Now, to partner with that, one of the devices I picked up a long time ago was the Nest Cam. So because I have my dogs and because I have a crazy winter, I realized that I had some issues where if the snow fell off my roof in the right places, it would create a bridge allowing my dogs to jump my 6-foot fence and go for a stroll around the town. So that was concerning for me. It actually happened, and somebody found my dog and gave me a call while I was at work, and so that prompted me to pick up a camera. So I had one of these Nest Cams inside my house, pointed out a window, and use that to kind of monitor the snow conditions and monitor the dogs. From this one camera system, I now have a 3-camera system, two indoor cameras. So one that points looking at my front door, one that points in my garage. So then, like I said, I can check and see, you know, if I'm letting someone into my garage, I can check and see where they are, what they're doing. It's a good way just to monitor my garage doors and monitor, you know, my car when it's parked in there and whatnot. And then I actually got, I've been actually emailing Nest and bugging along with tons of other people about wanting an outdoor camera system. They finally released an outdoor camera system. I was one of the first people to get my hands on it, bought it, installed it, and so I have that mounted to my garage looking over my backyard so I can see my dogs. It's two-way audio, so I can actually talk to my dogs and yell at them if they're barking. I can hear them if they're barking. But again, just another thing to not only check on my animals, see how they're doing, but another sense of security as well, because now all the entrances to my house are covered with cameras. It's all unified in one system. Now, because it's a Nest system, which Nest is owned by Google, those are never going to be HomeKit compatible. It's pretty much been guaranteed that you can never expect those to become HomeKit compatible. Does that bother me? No. I don't use them for the motion sensor technology. I don't use it for the facial recognition. I use it to manage, you know, remotely, check on my house, see how my house is doing, how my animals are doing when I'm gone. So it doesn't bother me. I'm not going to replace, you know, 3 cameras that'd be expensive to replace with a HomeKit compatible system. It does what I need to do. The app is great, very fantastic, easy to use. So, and then if you want to, you can pay their service fee and have it actually DVR and record. Again, I don't have the need for that, so I don't do that. But being able to just check in live and see how things are going, great peace of mind, especially with my animals. You know, I've got a lab and a husky. Both are very rambunctious and totally capable of digging under a fence or jumping over a fence or, you know, whatever it may be. So having that system in place is kind of that third step that I have in my home automation that I really enjoy and I really love. So something else that I utilize, which a lot of people don't think about, is remote desktop. And the reason why I bring this up, and it confuses a lot of people when I partner this in with home automation, is I use TeamViewer. TeamViewer is a, you know, peer-to-peer, you know, connection, remote desktop type of application. And I can run it from my iPad, my iPhone, or any of my computers. What I like to be able to do is I have my iMac in my office. My office is attached to my living room. And so I can actually remote into my computer, flip the camera on, and now I've got speakers, a microphone, and a camera to see what's going on inside my house. So I can check on my cat, I can check on my dogs, you know, just another option inside my house because I already have an iMac with the built-in camera system. So why not utilize that? You know, it's not a true home automation piece. It's not really an Internet of Things. It's just a way that I can remote check what's going on in my house. You know, just another way that gives you that peace of mind to be able to check in and see what's going on. So don't forget about that. If you have an iMac or have a desktop computer with a webcam on it, setting yourself up with a secure way to remote in and see what's going on, definitely a plus. I suggest it for anybody that's interested in that. So that's pretty much my setup. You know, like I said, it's a beginner setup. It's pretty solid. I like it. It's none of it is HomeKit compatible. But the things that I'm waiting for, so I really like the Philips Hue lighting system component. I really have liked that for a long time. Really haven't pulled the trigger. I want to pull the trigger. I almost bought the starter set, the version 3 starter set here a couple weeks ago because that is now HomeKit compatible. That was the big thing I was waiting for, is that it was not HomeKit compatible. But I haven't done it yet. I've got some weird lights now that I've switched my lighting situation at my home into a lot of LED. So a lot of my fixtures have built-in LED lights, which means obviously no bulbs for me to replace. And the things that I do have to replace are lights that are part of like ceiling fans. And so I'm not sure when I want to go that route. And if I am going to go with Philips Hue, I think I am now that they're HomeKit compatible. But custom lighting, you know, Philips Hue has a partnership so you can get the LED strips to do, you know, mood lighting and behind your bed lighting or behind TV lighting or whatever. And so I think that's going to be on my agenda to pick up here relatively soon. I've been waiting a long time. And so once I get that system planned out a little more, I can finally buy into it and make the move. Like I said earlier on, being able to have my lights change color because of an NHL goal. Totally a nerdy thing, but I'm excited for it. So keep, you know, your eyes and ears open. When I do get that system, I'm sure I'll have a blog post about it, potentially another podcast specifically on it. But I do think that's the route I'm going to go. I also have stayed away from switches, just outlet switches, application, you know, that you can flip something on and off. There's a ton of them out there. Some are HomeKit compatible, some aren't. I'm just waiting for that technology to continue to develop before I dive in. I do have some features I would like to see added. I'd like to be able to get some, obviously, on some fans. There is a device out there right now that'll activate basically an IR signal, and I can remote control my portable air conditioner unit. So I could actually like turn that on my way home to cool down my house. And I haven't pulled that trigger either. The technology is close, but it's just not exactly where I want it yet. So keep your eye on those. You're going to see those come down in price and become more common and more, you know, not so simplistic and having to buy into another system. Because that's the thing, is if I'm going to do this, does that mean I have to keep them all the same brand? So then I have to make sure that I, you know, get a ton of these things, which they're not cheap. So I do plan on going the outlet switch type route in the near future. Again, I'm just going to kick back and wait and see, with having HomeKit open the way it is for developers, some amazing new products that I'm going to finally get access to. So the third thing is locks. So I've wanted smart locks for a long time, and there's some amazing ones out there. There really are. However, what I see for most of them is they're all the deadbolt type of locks. Now, my issue is my deadbolts on my doors are fine, but the thing is the door isn't necessarily properly aligned. So I'm in an older house. Obviously, nothing is straight. Nothing is, you know, level. And so dealing with these locks is going to be an issue for me if I want to go the deadbolt route. The big concern is going to be if I try and use an automated deadbolt and the door's not aligned properly, it's one, not going to lock, and two, it potentially could open the door. So clearly a problem for me. I want something that's automated for the door handle. That way I can still control the deadbolt. So it's a security thing, right? So if some issue happens, you know, the software fails or whatever, and all of a sudden my door's unlocked, I still am manually in control of the deadbolt. So I like that aspect, but I have not found a good handle, automated handle system that would just be the doorknob lock. So I'm waiting to see, you know, there's been a few different things that have popped out. There's been some, you know, basically some like Indiegogos and you know, some of those Kickstarter projects, but nothing I'm truly in love with yet. So that's the third item that I'm kind of waiting to see what's going to happen and what's going to come from that. And hopefully, you know, in the next year here, we see more development of HomeKit. We see more development of these devices, you know, the Internet of Things and home automation is not going away. It's going to get stronger. Hopefully it's also going to get cheaper. And so I think, you know, the subject itself is really, really awesome, really powerful. You know, as Apple talked about with Siri in their HomePod and encrypting and anonymous signals, you know, Apple's doing it right when it comes to user security. I understand, you know, Amazon and Google and how they're using their home technologies, but then you also know how they utilize data mining and, you know, how they can listen in, you know, quote unquote. I think Google was having a hard time because there was a couple commercials that were released that used the phrase that activates the Google Home system in the commercial. And so potentially, you know, if you had that system and you listen to that commercial on your television, all of a sudden your system's active. And, you know, there's some concerns with that for sure. The Siri stuff, you know, is another one. So there's a lot of development we're going to see, a lot of amazing technologies we're going to see. And I think, you know, user privacy and security are major concerns and, you know, hurdles that really people have to feel comfortable with to overcome those. So we're going to see just better and better things coming. You know, the users, all of us are going to benefit so much because everything is competitive. The technologies are moving crazy fast. And with our user security and privacy at the forefront of that, you know, ultimately, we're just going to be the winners of it. So I think it's going to be an amazing thing. If you haven't looked into home automation, you know, it does scare you. Totally understand that. It's an uncomfortable thing. You know, people always go, oh my God, the Terminator, you know, think about it, or HAL, or all those systems. But it really can save you some time and ultimately change how you operate in your house and become more efficient. And there are a lot of benefits to it. So give it a shot. Take a look at some of the products that I mentioned. Look at the other products that are out there. You know, I'm always looking to see what's new, new, bigger, better coming out. And I'm sure I'll have follow-up thoughts about this, you know, moving forward, especially as new technologies come out. So I hope you enjoyed my podcast today, The Creative Technologist, talking about home automation. So thanks for listening in, and until next time.
Thank you for listening to The Creative Technologist, a Jay Bauman podcast.